Prabhupada ki, Bhakti Vedanta ki, Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Giridas Maharaj ki, Jai Go Premanande. Okay, so tonight we'll complete chapter 23 of Canto 9, which is the second last chapter, the dynasties of the sons of Yayati. Next Monday we will have an overview class of the chapters from 17 to 24. So tomorrow night we'll begin chapter 24, and then we'll do the overview class next Monday, and then on Tuesday we'll finish off chapter 24, and then the closed book exam will be the following Monday. Like that. So it means your open book exams are due next Monday. Next Monday. Like that. So please, and your oral presentations should also be completed. Okay, so tonight we'll go through chapter 23. And we'll hear about the dynasties of Yati. Shukadev Goswami said, Anu, the fourth son of Yati, had three sons named Sabanara, Chakshu, and Parishnu. O king, from Sabanara came a son named Kalanara, and from Kalanara came a son named Srinjaya. From Srinjaya came a son named Janamijaya. From Janamijaya came Mahashala. From Mahashala, Mahamana. And from Mahamana, two sons named Ushinara and Titikshu. The four sons of Ushinara were Shibi, Vara, Krimi, and Daksha. And from Shibi again came four sons named Vrishadaba, Sudira, Madra, and Atma Tattvavit Kikaya. The son of Titikshu was Rushadrata. From Rushadrata came Homa. From Homa, Sutapa, and from Sutapa, Bali. By the semen of Dighatama, in the wife of Bali, the emperor of the world, six sons took birth, namely Anga, Vanga, Kalinga, Suna, Pundra, and Udra. These six sons, headed by Anga, later became the kings of six states in the eastern side of India. These states were known according to the names of their respective kings. From Anga came a son named Kalapana, and from Kalapana came Divirata. From Divirata came a son named Dhammarata, and his son was Chitrarata, who was celebrated as Romapad. Romapad, however, was without issue, and therefore his friend Maharaj Dasharat gave him his own daughter named Shanta. Romapad accepted her as his daughter, and thereafter she married Rishyashringa. When the demigods from the heavenly planets failed to shower rain, Rishyashringa was appointed the priest for performing the sacrifice. After being brought from the forest by the allurement of prostitutes who danced, staged theatrical performances accompanied by music, and embraced and worshipped him. After Rishyashringa came, the rain fell. Thereafter, Rishyashringa performed a sun giving sacrifice on behalf of Maharaj Dasharatha, who had no issue. And then Maharaj Dasharatha had sons. From Romapad, by the mercy of Rishyashringa, Chaturanga was born, and from Chaturanga came Prithulaksha. The sons of Prithulaksha were Brihadrata, Brihadkarma, and Brihadbanu. From the eldest, Brihadrata, came a son named Brihanmana, and from Brihanmana came a son named Jayadrata. The son of Jayadrata, by the womb of his wife, Sambhuti, was Vijaya. And from Vijaya, Driti was born. From Driti came Dhritabrata. From Dhritabrata, Satkarma. And from Satkarma, Adhiratta. While playing on the bank of the Ganges, Adhiratta found a baby wrapped up in a basket. The baby had been left by Kunti because she was born before she was married. Because Adhiratta had no sons, he raised his baby as his own. His son was later known as Karna. So, we know a little bit about Karna from the Mahabharata. So, in the previous chapter, and in this chapter, we're hearing about the members of the Kuru dynasty. These are the sons or the descendants of the moon god. So the Kuru dynasty and the Yadu dynasty are both descending from the moon god. So we're hearing about members of the Kuru dynasty. So last week, in the previous chapter, we heard about Arjuna, he appeared. We heard about Duryodhana. We're hearing about the different members. Bhishma was described. And now we're hearing about other members, so particularly Karna. So Karna is a very famous personality and a very interesting personality in the Mahabharata. So why was he called Karna?
When he was born, here.
Yeah, because when he was born, he had armor on his body. His body, attached to his body, was armor. And attached to his ear was natural earrings, which were there. So he was the son of?
Kunti.
Yeah, Kunti and the sun god. Surya. So Surya, the sun god, because he gave birth to Karna, Karna naturally had armor, kavach, was already connected to the body. So he was extremely powerful. And Karna, in the beginning of his life, he was an extraordinary warrior. His father, who was bringing him up, his name was Adhiratta, he was a chariot driver. So a chariot driver is like it's a shudra's job, it's not a kshatriya. But he always felt like a kshatriya. He did not want to be a chariot driver. He knew that he was far greater than that. But he needed a military guru. So in order to be trained, who did he approach?
Drona.
Yeah, Dronacharya. But then who else did he approach before that? Who trained him in military science? Parashuram, the great warrior, who was an incarnation of the Lord himself. So he approached Lord Parashuram, and he was trained. And Parashuram said to him in the beginning of the training, he said, "Which caste are you from?" So he said, "I'm a Brahmana." He lied. Because what did Parashuram do? He'd already killed all the Kshatriyas. So if he said he's a Kshatriya, he would have attacked Karna. So Karna said, "I'm a Brahmana." He lied. Because he wanted to be trained by Parashuram. So Parashuram, he trained him and he taught him everything about the military science. But then, at the end of his training, Parashuram was massaging Karna was massaging Parashuram's head. And one Rakshasa took the guise of an insect and came and he bored into Karna's leg. And then some blood from his leg then it touched Parashuram on the cheek, because his head was resting on his Karna's leg when he was massaging his head. So when he felt the blood on his cheek, then he touched the blood, he said, "Where does the blood come from?" He said, "The blood has come from my leg." He said, "What has caused the bleeding?" And he said, "One insect has bored into my leg." And he said, "Then you cannot be a Brahmana, because a Brahmana, no Brahmana can tolerate this kind of pain. So you must be a Kshatriya." He said, "Actually, I don't know what I am." At that stage, he had no idea. He said, "I was brought up by Adhiratta." Like that. He said, "I don't know what I am." He said, "No, you must be a child." He became very angry. So he said, "I've taught you these celestial weapons, But when you're facing your most powerful enemy, these weapons, the mantras, will leave your mind. Now, when you need the mantra the most, and you need the weapons the most, then the weapon will disappear from your mind. The mantra will disappear. So, now he was cursed. And then after being cursed by Parashuram, he was very distressed. And then he was going through the forest, and then through the forest, he saw through the bushes, he saw one animal, and he took the arrow, and then he shot the arrow, and he thought it was a tiger or deer or something, but it was a cow. So he shot the cow, and then when the owner of the cow saw that he'd shot the cow, he said, then, because you have hurt this innocent animal, you also will die in this way. And you will also be shot and killed when you are helpless. So he was cursed. So this is, what do we learn from this? One thing we learn is our destiny is more powerful than us. You may have so many plans in your life, but there are other plans which are more powerful than you. And when those plans come, your whole life can change and there's nothing that you can do. We've all experienced that in our life. So, Karna, he was very powerful, but because of these curses, he became... there was a certain amount of inauspiciousness there. So then, Arjuna was trained by Drona, along with his five brothers, his four brothers, and his 100 cousins. The Kauravas. Everyone was trained by Drona. So then Drona, he had a... they arranged in a big arena, just like you see the MCG. So how many people can fit in the MCG?
100,000
people. And then, like 2,000 years ago, they built the Colosseum in Rome. And thousands of years ago they built that. And how many people could sit in that? 70,000 people. Now it's 2,000 years ago. So back then, thousands of years ago, 5,000 years ago, they built one like Colosseum, like arena, like at least 100,000 people could sit there. And the Arjuna and his brothers and his cousins, they came out and they displayed everything they'd learned from Dronacharya. They displayed that for the benefit of the public, the kingdom, so that everyone could see how powerful the princes were, who would protect them.
They gain confidence.
Yeah, they gain confidence in their rulers. So after everyone had shown their power, everyone came out, and then Bhimasen came out with his club, right? And he showed his power, and then Duryodhan came out with his club, showed his power, and then those two were ready to fight, but Dronacharya said, no fight. And then Arjuna came at the end, and then Arjuna did everything which no one else could do. Now, he rode on the chariot, and he rode around the arena, and he shot his arrows in such a way that no one else could match him. So everyone understood he was the greatest warrior. But then at that moment when Arjuna finished, Karna walked into the arena, and then he's like his armlets, like on his arm, on his wrist he had armlets, so he hit them together like that. And then he made a sound which was like thunder. Extremely powerful. So when he made that sound, everyone was struck by the potency of this warrior. So then, being struck by the potency of the warrior, they were wondering, who is this person? They said, who is this person? He looked like the sun god himself. And then he challenged Arjuna. He said, I can do everything that Arjuna has done. And I can even defeat Arjuna in a battle. We're speaking about Karna. So I can even defeat Arjuna in battle. And then Bhima, Arjuna's brother, he said, you may be powerful, but you are not a Kshatriya. Because you are not a Kshatriya, you cannot fight with Arjuna. Arjuna will only fight against Kshatriyas. We don't know who you are. So Duryodhana, he said, then I make him a Kshatriya. Because a Kshatriya must have a kingdom. I will give him one state of my kingdom. And he became the ruler of that. So immediately, overnight, or in one moment, he became a Kshatriya. He had a kingdom. Like that. So then, he performed, he got on the chariot, and then as a Kshatriya, he performed all of the acts and all the feats that Arjuna had done. And then after doing everything that Arjuna had done, he turned to Arjuna in front of everyone, you know, maybe 100,000 people or more. And he said, now I will sever your head in front of everyone. And I'll show you who is the greatest Kshatriya on this planet. So Arjuna accepted the challenge. And Karna was ready to fight. And then the sun appeared over Karna and shone on Karna, the sun god. And then Indra came, and Indra created a cloud over Arjuna to protect him from the sun. And they were ready to fight. And just at that moment, the sun set, and Dronacharya said, there shall be no fight today. So then, Karna, he had inherited the kingdom, and he became very close friends with Duryodhana, because Duryodhana had given him an entire kingdom. So because he'd received a kingdom, he became extremely grateful to Duryodhana. And he swore allegiance to Duryodhana, that he would never leave Duryodhana. And Karna had one defect in particular, that he was envious of Arjuna. So that was one downfall that he had. So actually they were brothers. So as time went by, Karna was actually told by Kunti and also by Krishna that Arjuna and Yudhishthira, they are your brothers, and if you make an alliance with them, they will accept you as the elder brother, as the king, and Yudhishthira and the others, they will follow you. But he said that, no, I cannot give up my loyalty to Duryodhana under any circumstance. So then when Kunti, the mother, she came to Karna and she said, please do not fight with your brothers. He said, I promise you that at the end of the battle, five of us will still be alive. Only either I will die or Arjuna will die. But everyone else I will spare them. I will not kill them. He made that promise. And then on the battlefield, when the battle was actually taking place, then Bhima, he fought with Karna three times. And one time he actually defeated Karna. But he took his bow and he hit him on the chest. He was laying on the ground and he just hit him on the chest, which is the equivalent of killing. He dishonored him. And he said, I could kill you, but I'm going to leave you for Arjuna. And then twice, Karna defeated Bhimasen. And when Bhima was lying on the ground, Karna took his bow and hit him on the chest. And he said, I could kill you, but I promised your mother I'd only kill one of you. So it will be Arjuna, I won't kill you. So Karna was an amazingly powerful warrior. And at the end of his life, he was killed by Arjuna. And that was in the circumstances where the curses, which we spoke about before, the curses took hold. That he would be, at the time when he needed his mantra, or his weapon against his greatest enemy, the mantra disappeared from his mind. He could not think. And he was also cursed to be killed in a helpless condition. So when he was fighting Arjuna, his chariot was going across the plain of Kurukshetra, and the ground in Kurukshetra became muddy from all the blood of so many Kshatriyas who had died. So when his chariot, his wheel sunk into the ground, he got off the chariot, he was lifting the chariot, the wheel, out. And then when he was lifting the wheel, and he was about to get back on the chariot, then Krishna said, shoot him now. Kill him now. And Arjuna did not want to do it, because you'd never shoot someone who is harmless. Yeah. But he shot him, and took off his head. And Karna said to him, when Arjuna was about to fire the arrow, he said, what are you doing? And then shot him. Because normally you would not kill a Kshatriya, you would not fight a Kshatriya like that. That was not the rules of the Kshatriyas. Like that. But Krishna ordered, he said, no, kill him now, he deserves to be killed like this. So because of the curse, then he was So it's a little bit about karma. So we're hearing about the members of the Kuru dynasty and the Yadu dynasty, the descendants of the Luna bunch. Which verse are we on?
14.
Okay. If my page skipped. So this is the final. Okay. Okay. O king, the only son of Karna was Vrishasen. Druyu, the third son of Yayati, had a son named Babru. And the son of Babru was known as Setu. The son of Setu was Arabda. And Arabda's son was Gandhara. And Gandhara's son was Dharma. Dharma's son was Durita. Durita's son was Dumada. And Dumada's son was Pracheta, who had 100 sons. The Prachetas, the son of Pracheta, occupied the northern side of India, which was devoid of Vedic civilization, and because kings and became kings there. Yayati's second son was Turvasu. The son of Turvasu was Vani, and the son of Vani, Bhaga. The son of Bhaga, Banuman. The son of Banuman was Tribhanu, and his son was the magnanimous Karandama. Karandama's son was Marut, who had no sons and who therefore adopted a son of the Puru dynasty, Maharaj Dushmanta, as his own. Maharaj Dushmanta, desiring to occupy the throne, returned to his original dynasty, the Puru dynasty, even though he had accepted Maruta as his father. O Maharaj Parikshit, let me now describe the dynasty of Yadu, the eldest son of Maharaj Yati. This description is supremely pious and banishes the reactions of sinful activities in human society. Simply by hearing this description, one is freed from all sinful reactions. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, the Supersoul in the hearts of all living entities, descended in his original form as a human being in the dynasty or family of Yadu. Yadu had four sons named Sahasrajit, Kroshta, Nala, and Ripu. Of these four, the eldest, Sahasrajit, had a son named Shatajit, who had three sons named Mahahaya, Renuhaya, and Haihaya. So, what is the Mandu Prabhu? Not to me.
As confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam 1211, Bhagavatam Tattvavidat, Tattvam, Utnanam, Atpayam, Ramayana, Samadhi, Bhagavan, Vidhi, Sattva. Learn transcendentalists who know the absolute truth called this non-dual substance, Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan. The majority of the transcendentalists understand only the impersonal Brahman or localized Paramatma, for the personality of God is very difficult to understand. As the Lord says in Bhagavad-gita 7.3, Manushyanam sarasraisu hasit jayadi siddhaya yadadam abhisiddhana hasitvam vidhitavala. Out of many thousands among men, one may endeavor for perfection. And of those who have received perfection, hardly one knows meaning truth. The yogis and jnanis, that is the mystic yogis and the impersonalists, can understand the absolute truth as impersonal or localized. But although such realized souls are above ordinary human beings, they cannot understand how the supreme absolute truth can be a person. Therefore, it is said that out of many siddhas, the souls who have already realized the absolute truth, one may understand Krishna, who exactly resembles a human being, Narakuli. This human form was explained by Krishna himself after he manifested the Virat Bhupa. The Virat Bhupa is not the original form of the Lord. The Lord's original form is Devibhuja, Shyama Sundara. Morally, the Lord with two hands, playing a flute, Yam Shyama Sundara, Achintya Kuna Swarupa. The Lord's forms are proof of His inconceivable qualities. Although the Lord maintains innumerable universes within the period of His breath, He is dressed with a form exactly like that of a human being. That does not mean, however, that He is a human being. This is His original form. But because He looks like a human being, those with poor fund of knowledge consider Him an ordinary man. The Lord says, Avajananti mamura manisam tanu asrita paran bhava ajananto mamagura maheswara. Fools deride me when I descend in the human form. They do not know my transcendental nature and my supreme dominion over all that be. By the Lord's param bhava or transcendental nature, He is all-pervading Paramatma, living in the core of the hearts of all living entities. Yet He looks like a human being. Mayavada philosophy says that the Lord's originally impersonal, but assume a human form and many other forms when He descends. Actually, however, He is originally like a human being, and the impersonal Brahman consists of the rays of His body. Yasya Prabhu, Prabhu Jagat Andapur.
So any points in this purport? Any other points?
There are three forms: Brahman form, then Triple Soul, and Absolute Krishna. And then Lord Krishna is telling that His original form is two-handed, Shyam Sundar.
Very good. Anything else? Any other points? So Prabhupada is explaining, he quotes that famous verse from the second chapter of the Bhagavatam, that the Absolute Truth can be understood in three phases. So we're about to hear about the appearance of Lord Krishna. And that's what this is leading to. The descendants of the Chandra dynasty. Now, Krishna himself, who is known as Sri Krishna Chandra Bhagavan, and Krishna himself is appearing within the Chandra dynasty. So this is foretelling or explaining the lead up to Krishna's appearance. So he appears just like an ordinary man. So the Absolute Truth has three features. The Brahman, the Paramatma, and the Super Soul. So now we're about to hear about the Bhagavan feature. A little bit too competitive. Okay. We're about to hear about the Bhagavan feature, which means the original form of God. So Prabhupada has explained in the very beginning, the introduction of the Bhagavatam, that as we study the nine cantos, the whole point of studying the nine cantos is when we come to the end of this canto, we should be God-realized. So next year, if by Krishna's mercy we study the 10th canto next year carefully, because Prabhupada wanted people to study his books, not just read them haphazardly. You know, many of us have read the Bhagavatam, many of us have read many of Prabhupada's books, but this is a little different. Prabhupada desired that we have systematic courses or systematic study of his books. Because when you study it, as we are doing in these courses, we're studying it in a much deeper level, a much more thorough level. And the 10th canto in particular will take a much deeper level of study. Because if you look at all of the Puranas and all the Vedic literatures, there are 18 Mahapuranas. Now only two of the Puranas have commentaries. Which two Puranas have commentaries out of all of them? 18 Puranas, only the Vishnu Purana and this Purana, the Bhagavad Purana. They're the only two that have commentaries, which shows that they're the most important of all the Puranas. Now, of the two Puranas, the Vishnu Purana only has one commentary. The Bhagavatam has many commentaries. Many people have written commentaries in the Bhagavad Gita. It shows that it's the most important out of all of the Puranas. And when you get to the 10th canto has many more commentaries compared to the rest of the other 11 cantos. So the 10th canto is by far the most important canto because the commentaries are much more elaborate. There's many more commentaries. And for example, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, who's commented on all 12 cantos, but his commentary on the 10th canto is far more elaborate, far more detailed, as are the commentaries of the other acharyas. So we can see that the 10th canto is the summum bonum. That is the ashraya, the 10 subject matters of the Bhagavatam culminate in the subject matter of the 10th canto. And Prabhupada says when we get to the end of the 9th canto, which hypothetically will be in the next couple of weeks, we've studied together for years, and now we're coming to the end of the 9th canto, we should be God realized. There should be a certain level of Krishna consciousness that we attain so that we can begin to understand the 10th canto. Otherwise, we're not really qualified to study the 10th canto. So the 10th canto requires a deep level of qualification, a deep level of commitment, a deep level of purity, a deep level of sincerity and seriousness to ascertain it, understand it, and to study it properly. So now we're hearing that Krishna is appearing. So we're about to hear about his Bhagavan form. But to understand him as Bhagavan, you must equally understand him as Paramatma and Brahman, which are his other two features. Prabhupada explains this also in the introduction. You go right back to the introduction of the first canto. Prabhupada says, the Bhagavatam does not deal with God. It deals with the absolute truth. So the absolute truth is Krishna in his original form as Shaktiman. Shaktiman means the embodiment of potency, or the person who has unlimited potency. And Shakti means Krishna's unlimited energies. Now, to understand Brahman, Brahman is one of Krishna's features. What is Brahman constituted of? Because we always see, whenever you see a picture of Krishna, right, he has the Brahman effulgence emanating from him. So what is Brahman? What is it constituted of? What is it made of? And why does Krishna have it? Why do you never see a picture of Krishna without this Brahman or this effulgence? What is Brahman?
The rays coming out of his body.
Yeah, but what are the rays? What are they made of? What is it? What is it that's coming out of his body? Right? It's his Shaktis. Because Krishna has so much potency that he's luminous. He has energy coming from him. That's his unlimited Shaktis. Just like you see the sun is so powerful. The sun is a incarnation of Krishna. The sun god is an incarnation of Narayana or God himself. And the sun planet has so much potency that its energy is distributed throughout the universe. So that is the energy of the sun, the heat, the light, which carries so much potency. That heat and light sustains life on this planet. This planet is the most important planet in this universe. But this planet is completely reliant upon the sun's energy, right, to sustain life. Without the sun's energy, there's no life on this planet. All of the food that we eat, the energy comes from the sun. The fire that we burn, that comes from the sun. All energy comes from the sun and the moon. But the sun is the source of energy or light. So Krishna, this Brahman effulgence, is his unlimited Shaktis. And it says that he has 16 major Shaktis. And we hear a description of the different Shaktis. Ishta Shakti, Kriya Shakti, Jnana Shakti, Kala Shakti. Right? Some of the major Shaktis which come from Krishna's. Just like, what is the function of our mind? What does our mind do? It has three functions. Thinking, feeling, willing. So Krishna also has these Shaktis. What is the thinking Shakti called?
Ichashakti, Kriya Shakti.
Yeah. So which one is the thinking Shakti? jnana. So Krishna is jnana, shakti, thinking. Krishna thinks. He has jnana, which means he has complete knowledge of everything. He has complete perception of everything. So Krishna can think about something because he knows everything. And then when he desires, he thinks about something, he desires for that, for something to take place. That is called ichcha. Ichcha means thinking, feeling. Yeah, we feel. We think about something, we feel, oh. We think about a mango, and then we feel, oh, it would be nice to taste a mango. So that feeling, ichcha, means desire. Oh, I wish I could taste it. So Krishna has that ichcha shakti. Ichcha shakti means his desire to make something happen. If Krishna just desires that something will happen, it happens automatically. That is his unlimited potency. And then, thinking, feeling, and willing. Willing means you make it happen or you want it to happen. It must happen. That is called Kriya Shakti. So that is Krishna's Kriya. Kriya means his force, his potency, that he can make something happen. Krishna thinks about something, he desires it to happen, and then just by desiring it, then Kriya, it all happens. So if Krishna wants to eat a mango appears in front of him. Well, what's an example in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes? He took the seed of the mango, put it in the ground, and just from the seed, a tree grew. Right? That's an example of God's potency. Just by his desire, then it grew in front of everyone. And then everyone had these huge mangoes to take, to honor as prasad. So that is a description of the Lord's potency. So all this is his Brahman effulgence. Also, it is described that Brahman effulgence is constituted of the living entities, the jivas. So each one of us is said to make up to be a particle of the Brahman effulgence. So it is described that energy, because it says that we come from God in one sense. So it says that we are emanating from God. And all the jivas together make up that Brahman effulgence. Sometimes it's also described like that. So, he has Brahman, and then his second feature is Paramatma. Paramatma means he is everywhere simultaneously. That's the philosophy of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Achintya Veda, Veda Tattva. Krishna is everything, but he is different from everything simultaneously. Every atom in creation is Krishna's energy, and Krishna is non-different from that energy. But simultaneously, he is apart from it. So he's one with it, he is different from it. That is Paramatma. Paramatma is one with everything because he's in every atom, but he's different from everything. Because Krishna is separate in his original form from all these things. So how does Krishna know everything? Through Paramatma, through Super Soul. And then what we're hearing about now is Bhagavan. Bhagavan means, Bhaga means opulence, Aishwaryasya Samagrasya, Viryasya, Yashashaha, Shriyaha, Jnana Vairagi, Yash Chaiva, Shanambhaga, Hitingana, six bhaga, Shanambhaga, means there are six opulences, the strength, the knowledge, the renunciation, the wisdom, the beauty, and the fame. So Krishna has these six opulences. So this is called Bhagavan. Bhagavan means the abode of the six opulences. So that's who we're about to hear about in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. So the 10th canto is a description of this personality, Bhagavan, who is the supreme personality of Godhead. So, any points so far? So then, Prabhupada then quotes the Bhagavad Gita that out of thousands of people, someone tries to understand the absolute truth. But it is very difficult for someone to understand the absolute truth is a cowherd boy. That's why you must understand and study the nine cantos very carefully. Prabhupada says, if you study the nine cantos systematically, by the end of that you will become a God-realized soul. Because it's very difficult for people to understand this point, that God is a cowherd boy. And that is what we're about to hear about in the very beginning of the 10th canto. We hear that God is a cowherd boy. From chapters 1, practically, all the way through to late 30s. He finishes the Rasa Lila in chapter 33. Thing around about chapter 38, that's when he prepares to go to Mathura. So, up until then, we hear about him as a cowherd boy. Now, this is a very difficult fact for people to accept and understand. Most people cannot understand he's a cowherd boy. Even amongst devotees, they can't understand he's a cowherd boy. All right? Many of the sampradayas do not worship him as a cowherd boy. Many sampradayas worship him as Narayana, right? As Vishnu. You see, in South India, people do not worship. There's not very many temples of Krishna in South India. No. In South India, everyone worships him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as Mahavishnu, right? Or as Narayana, Lakshmi Narayana. But he's not worshipped the way we worship him. So it's difficult for people to understand. And when Lord Chaitanya travelled to South India, and he stayed with Venkata Bhatta, the father of Gopal Bhatta Goswami, then Lord Chaitanya was teasing him. And he said, why is it that the wife of your god, Narayana, Lakshmi Devi, why is it that she is attracted to my Krishna in Vrindavan? And he would tease him like that. And it was very difficult for even other devotees to understand that Krishna, as a cowherd boy, is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. And actually there are statements in, not in the Srimad Bhagavatam, but there are statements in other Puranas where it states that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the original form of God is Narayana, or Vishnu, and Krishna and Balaram appeared on the body of Mahavishnu as a black and a white hair. Right? And that black and white hair, then they incarnated as Krishna and Balaram. So even in some Puranas, it is told that the original form of God is Mahavishnu, or Narayana, and that Krishna is the incarnation. He's not the original form. It is said like that. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it does not explain it like that. It explains that Krishna is the original form and all others have emanated from him. Yeah. And even in other Puranas, it describes that Shiva is supreme. So there are many contradictory statements in the Vedas. That's why it is asserted by Vyasadeva himself that the Srimad Bhagavatam is the spotless Purana. And it was the Purana which was especially emphasized by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because in this Purana, it establishes that Krishna, that cowherd boy, is the original form of God. And even in Mathura and Dwarka, Krishna expands. Even in Mathura and Dwarka, that is not the original form of God. That is God's expansion, or his expanded form, performs the pastimes in Mathura and Dwarka. But the original form of God is only found in Vrindavan. He is not found outside of Vrindavan. So this is the original form of God. So the Srimad Bhagavatam is asserting this, that this cowherd boy is the original form and the original personality of Godhead. And everyone else is an expansion or an expansion, not the expansion of that original form. So it is rare that someone will understand that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As Krishna himself says in the Bhagavad Gita, there are so many forms of God, but it's very rare that someone will understand that I am the original form of God. It's very rare that anyone will even understand there is God. What to speak that God is a person? What to speak that God is Vishnu? What to speak that God is Krishna? But Lord Chaitanya is emphasizing that the devotees, his followers, they should meditate only on Krishna. And Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita, in one of his purports, I think in the 12th chapter, or the end of the 11th chapter, that Prabhupada says, devotees should only meditate on Krishna, and they should not divert their attention even to any other form. No? We should not even meditate deeply on any other form of God. Only Krishna. And not only Krishna, but only Krishna in Vrindavan. That is the teaching of Lord Chaitanya. Or Balaram, if you're attached. Because Balaram is also the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But then you'll take birth on the other side of the Jamuna River. Because Balaram's pastimes are more prevalent on the west, on the eastern side of the Jamuna. But on the western side, then Krishna's pastimes are more prevalent. So it's okay, wherever you desire to go. But Lord Chaitanya, he is emphasizing worship of Lord Krishna in his original form. So why do we worship Krishna instead of Lord Balaram, primarily? Because if you worship Krishna, you also get Radharani. That's why we worship Krishna. Because then you'll also go to Radha. At this point in time, we just have to wake up in the morning. You don't even have to worry about which form of God you're meditating. You just have to stay awake when you're chanting japa. Because you can't even do that at the moment. So how will you understand the original form of God? But the Bhagavatam is teaching us the original form of God is Krishna in Vrindavan. Any points? Yes.
When you said Dwarka form and Mathura form is an expansion of Krishna.
Achha.
But what about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? He's identical, so I mean he himself is emphasized, but he's also the Supreme Personality of God.
Yeah.
And we are encouraged to worship future God in the houses.
Yeah.
So how do we see that connection?
Because this is called Parishishta Lila. That Krishna performed his pastimes. There's some embodiment of God's pastimes in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. Krishna in Vrindavan is the highest pinnacle of God's enjoyment. His lila, the perfection of his lila is the pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan. But Krishna himself in Vrindavan, he feels and thinks that I am the Ashraya. I am the Vishaya, which means the object of love. But the Ashraya, the abode of love, she experiences more happiness than I do. So therefore, in order to complete my experience in the realm of love of God, love for me, I have to take her position in order to fully relish or taste myself. Because I cannot taste myself. I need to be the Ashraya, the abode of love. And from that position, I can fully experience and taste myself. So therefore, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Radha Krishna Nanyanya, then Lord Chaitanya takes the jyoti, which means the complexion, and the bhav, or the mood, or the sentiment of Radharani, and then he, from that position, then he experiences Srimati Radharani's love. And then he can fully. So it is called parish. It is like the final conclusion, or the after. Or the afterword of Krishna's pastimes. Krishna experienced unlimited bliss in his pastimes, but still there was more to be known. So to relish that, he had to take Radharani's position and her complexion. Okay. Any other points? So then Prabhupada says in the purport that fools deride him, Krishna, when he appears in a human form. So people cannot understand Krishna. Even we cannot understand Krishna. We still do not fully understand that Krishna's pastimes are Janma Karma Chame Divyam, as Krishna says himself in the Gita. And Prabhupada has said on occasion, that is the most important verse in the Bhagavad Gita, that you must understand that Krishna's pastimes and his appearance are transcendental. But we don't fully understand that. That's why we're not fully qualified to study the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. Because you have to understand, to really understand and fully realize Krishna's pastimes, you have to understand that everything about Krishna is fully transcendental. There is nothing mundane. So foolish people, they deride Krishna. When he appears, they say he cannot be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We see this in the pastimes in Vrindavan, that Brahma made that mistake. Lord Brahma saw Krishna, but he thought he cannot be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? And he challenged Krishna's supremacy. And then in the Brahma Vimohana Lila, then we see that Lord Brahma was educated, bewildered, and he was educated as to Krishna's actual position. Now that's interesting, because when we study the 10th canto, we'll see this was at the end of Krishna's Paugandha Leela. Because Krishna has three ages within his childhood. So what are Krishna's ages?
1 to 5
is called?
Balya.
Balya or Kumara. Yeah, what does Kumara mean? Yeah, it means when they're below 5 years old. They're called Kumara. Krishna Kumara. It means Kumara, it means very small. And then when he is between the age of 5 and 10, he is called Paugandha. Paugandha means, when he's up to 5 years old, that's when Vatsalya Ras is mainly prominent. And then when Krishna is between the age of 5 and 10, that is when Sakya Ras is mainly prominent. And then he gets to Kaishora. Kaishora is mean when he becomes a youth, from the age of 10 to 15. So it says that Krishna never ages past 16. So he's always Kaishora. He's always a youth. That's when the conjugal pastimes, the Sringara Ras or the Madhurya Ras, that's when that is prominent. Now, it is explained by the Acharyas, when someone is very auspicious, when a person is very auspicious, they age at 1.5 times their age. So even though Krishna was 10 when he began the Kaishora Leela, he already looked like he was 15. Because he was 1.5 times his age in appearance. He was a 10-year-old boy, but he appeared like a 15-year-old. And this is one of the ways the Acharyas, they counteract Krishna being criticized, because it says here, fools deride Krishna. They say Krishna cannot be the Supreme Lord. He is lusty. He's dancing with the gopis. So then the Acharyas say, he cannot be lusty because he's only 10. 10-year-old people don't have lust in their heart. These days they do. But previously, in a more civilized age, when they're 10-year-old children don't have lust in their heart. But he was acting like a 15-year-old because he was 1.5 times in his body, he was already 15. But in his mind, they say, look, he's only 10, so it cannot be like that. So his pastime. So when he bewilders Brahma, that's at the end of the Paugandha Leela. So he shows Brahma that I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he shows all of us that I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Fools deride me. They cannot understand who I am, but actually I'm supreme. And then from that platform, that's when you go into these pastimes as Kaishora. That is called Kaishora Leela. So Krishna says, fools deride me. I come, I perform pastimes, they say, look, he's just a human being. But quite obviously, he's not a human being. Because there's a few things that he does which are not human, like he lifts Govardhan Hill, that's not human. Right? He kills all these demons, that is not human. Right? So many things that he does which are not ordinary. So we cannot say he's just an ordinary person. And even the Brijbasis, sometimes they have discussions and they say to his father, Nanda Maharaj, he's not an ordinary person. No? He can't be ordinary, he must be a great demigod. No? Thank you. Thank you for the darshan. So even the Prishbhasa said, Nanda Maharaj, he's not an ordinary person, he must be a great demigod. Nanda Maharaj said, he can't be a great demigod. He said, if he's such a great personality, why does he get scared at night when there is thunder in the sky? When there's thunder in the sky, he runs into my bed and jumps into my bed and hides. So if he's such a great demigod, why does he get scared of the thunder? Why is he always stealing? If he's such a great demigod, ordinary people can control their senses. Krishna can't control his senses for a moment. He's always stealing something. He's always eating something. You know the pastime in Vrindavan where one of the older gopis, she caught Krishna by the hand. She said, now I'll take you to Mother Yashoda and I'll prove to your mother that you're always stealing. So she took Krishna by the hand. She walks in and she has Krishna and she says, just look, I've captured your son. He's always stealing. And Mother Yashoda looks and said, I don't understand what you're talking about. She looks down. And then her son has appeared. And she's very bewildered. So then she walks out. She walks back around the corner and she looks down and it's Krishna again. And Krishna said, and if you ever try that again, next time I'll turn into your husband. So Krishna fools deride him. They think he's an ordinary person, but he is not ordinary. And sometimes the Brijbasis, they say he must be just like an ordinary person. But there's nothing about him that is ordinary. They say he's just like an ordinary boy, he is like that. They say Nanda Maharaj, yeah, he's a great demigod. Nanda Maharaj says, yes, but he tells lies constantly. He's always off stealing. Right. He goes into the gopi's house, he steals their makan chaw, steals their butter, he comes back. We say, were you stealing their butter? He said, I wasn't even there. I wasn't even in the neighborhood. Right. Lord Chaitanya, the same thing. Nimai, same thing. Nimai would go out to the Ganges, do so much mischief. Then he would come back down the road. When he came back down the road, he had dust all over him and ink, like he'd been at school. And his parents would say, we heard you at the Ganges all day and you were causing trouble. Say, I haven't been there. I was at school all day. I'm dressed just like it. So there's so many things that he does. Sometimes they say he's an ordinary person. And they say he's a great demigod. He's not a great demigod. He's just an ordinary boy. But actually, all of them know that he is the Supreme Lord. But they're so covered by their love for him that they cannot think of him in that way. So it is not easy to understand Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan because his pastimes are completely transcendental.
Your Maya covers him. Yeah. Your Maya covers him.
All the devotees. So when we go towards the 10th canto, we have to understand Krishna properly. That's what Prabhupada's point is here. If you don't understand him properly, you can't understand the 10th canto. You have to understand he is transcendental. Okay. The sons of Haihaya, the son of Haihaya was Dharma, and the son of Dharma was Netra, the father of Kunti, and from Kunti came a son named Sohanji. From Sohanji came Mahishman, and from Mahishman, Bhadra Senaka. The son of Bhadrasena was known as Durmada and Danaka. Danaka was the father of Kritavirya and also of Kritagni, Kritavarma and Kritoja. The son of Kritavirya was Arjuna. He, Kartavirya Arjuna, became the emperor of the entire world, consisting of seven islands, and received mystic power from Dattatreya, the incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus he obtained the mystic perfections known as Ashta Siddhi. No other king in this world could equal Kartavirya Arjuna in sacrifices, charity, austerity, mystic power, education, strength, or mercy. For 85,000 years, Kartavirya Arjuna continuously enjoyed material opulences with full bodily strength and unimpaired memory. In other words, he enjoyed inexhaustible material opulences with his six senses. Of the 1,000 sons of Kartavirya Arjuna, only 5 remained alive after the fight with Parashuram. The names were Jayadwaj, Shurasen, Vrishabha, Madhu, and Urjita. Jayadwaj had a son named Talajanga, who had 100 sons. All the Chachus in that dynasty known as Talajanga were annihilated by the great power received by Maharaj Sagara from Aurava Rishi. Of the sons of Talajanga, Vitihotra was the eldest. The son of Vitihotra, named Madhu, had a celebrated son named Vrishni. Madhu had 100 sons, of whom Vrishni was the eldest. The dynasties known as Yadava, Madhava, and Vrishni had their origin from Yadu, Madhu, and Vrishni. O Maharaj, Parikshit, because Yadu, Matu, and Vrishni each inaugurated the dynasty, the dynasties are known as Yadava, Madhava, and Vrishni. The son of Yadu, named Kroshta, had a son named Rijinavan. The son of Rijinavan was Swahita. The son of Swahita, Vishadgu. The son of Vishadgu, Chitrarata. The son of Chitrarata, Shashabindu. The greatly fortunate Shashabindu, who was a great mystic, possessed 14 opulences and was the owner of 14 great jewels. Thus he became the emperor of the world. In the Markandeya Purana, the 14 kinds of great jewels are described as follows: an elephant, a horse, a chariot, a wife, arrows, a reservoir of wealth, a garland, valuable costumes, trees, a spear, a noose, jewels, an umbrella, and regulative principles. To be the emperor, one must possess all 14 of these opulences. Shashabindu possessed them all. The famous Shashabindu had 10,000 wives, and by each he begot a lakh of sons. Therefore, the number of his sons was 10,000 lakhs. Among these many sons, six were the foremost, such as Prithushrava and Prithukirti. The son of Prithushrava was known as Dharma, and his son was known as Ushana. Ushana was the performer of 100 horse sacrifices. The son of Ushana was Ruchaka, who had five sons, Purujit, Rukma, Rukmeshu, Prithu, and Jaimagna. Please hear of these sons from me. Jaimagna had no sons, but because he was fearful of his wife, Shaivya, he could not accept another wife. Jaimagna once took from the house of some royal enemy a girl who was a prostitute. But upon seeing her, Shaivya was very angry and said to her husband, "My husband, you cheater, who is this girl sitting upon my seat on the chariot?" Jaimagna then replied, "This girl will be your daughter-in-law." Upon hearing these joking words, Shaivya smilingly replied. Shaivya said, "I am sterile and have no co-wife. How can this girl be my daughter-in-law? Please tell me." Jaimagna replied, "My dear queen, I shall see that you indeed have a son and that this girl will be your daughter-in-law." Long, long ago, Jaimagna had satisfied the demigods and the Pitas by worshipping them. Now by their mercy, Jaimagna's words came true. Although Shaivya was barren, by the grace of the demigods, she became pregnant and in due course of time gave birth to a child named Vidarbha. Before the child's birth, the girl had been accepted as a daughter-in-law, and therefore Vidarbha actually married her when he grew up. Jai. Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai. So next Monday night we'll do an overview of chapters 17 to 24, and your open book exams are due next Monday, so your oral presentations. And the following Monday, which will be the, what will the date be? 12th, so it must be 19th, 26th. Then that will be the closed book exam on the 26th. Okay, closed book exam key. Hare Krishna.